Welcome, folks, to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. Every week, diving deep into the truth of Catholic social teaching and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from Iowa Catholic Radio's Mercy Live Up Studios.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Papa Maher.
Papa Maher. We'll talk about that more in a little bit. We're coming to you live across America. Bo Bonner here in the the Iowa Catholic Radio Mercy Live Up Studios in Des Moines, Iowa, where I'm the director of the Seed Institute for Foundations in Ethics and Leadership, and also director of Mission and Ministry, Mercy College of Health Sciences here in Iowa. You can look at us, zetainstitute.com and mchs.edu. Bud out in Pittsburgh, typically at NINS, where he's the director of the National Institute of Newman Studies. But Bud, you're directing different things these days. What have you been up to?
I'm actually hiding in my nursery right now at home. Well, not my nursery, but the nursery. Rachel's asleep. The other kids are going about their business, but I'm at home this week.
And you can tell the adoring public why. Why are you at home this week?
So Rachel gave birth to our second son, sixth child, on Sunday, and he's a hulking behemoth, almost 10 pounds when he arrived. So.
Yeah, I saw a picture of him and backed up from the screen. Cyprian Maher, you guys all need to remember that name because pretty soon he will be lord over all of us and rule with an iron fist. We're glad to have you, though, because, like I said, we joked around about it last week that at any moment you might have to slip away from the radio show. And then when we were hearing about, you know, when the kid decided to come, we thought maybe you weren't going to make it today.
No, this is a priority, so I think we'll survive this hour here at the Maher household.
That's good. Well, as always, we're underwritten by Cartridge World, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights. For instance, if you have a new friend who just had a new child, you can print out congratulations. What I think Bud and Rachel want most is parenting advice, right, Bud? So if people need to print out reams of parenting advice to send to you in Pittsburgh, they can go to Cartridge World where they can print an infinite amount of advice to give you.
Well, Rachel would appreciate if you direct all of that towards me, parenting advice. But I'm thinking of printing some baptismal invitations pretty soon here. So, Cartridge World, it's great to have, you know, a trustworthy business like that you can count on.
What I like the idea is if, like, there was just this huge, like, Des Moines contingent all flying to Pittsburgh and everyone's like, what's going on? And they're like, it's a Maher baptism. They just invade your house. You have nowhere to let them sleep, so you let them sleep on a bed of French fries.
That's right. Or we set up a tent city in our backyard.
A tent city in Pittsburgh. I work over. Also, as always, brought to you by Mercy College of Health Science, our other underwriter. For instance, if I'm not going to make any pronouncements about how many more kids you're going to have, but as long as the Mars are running around, I think we need more nurses in for helping out with babies at least. And also, you know, everyone in Des Moines. It seems like every third person I've seen has either hurt or twisted their ankle. The point being, Bud, is people aren't getting well anytime soon. So if you want to get into a field where you know there will be work in the future, yeah. mchs.edu, all sorts of ways to be a part of Mercy College. There's stuff that's completely online, accelerated programs. We had the president on last week, and it was a wonderful time to hear about not only the professional aspect of it, but maybe the mercy difference because of our heritage and identity with the Sisters of Mercy.
Well, just to echo what you said, I read an article this week about, you know, like so many fields are kind of constricting in the number of employees they need. That's certainly not the case in healthcare. But, you know, you and I have joked about robots on the show in the past. I think it's safe to say that healthcare is one field that will never be able to be delivered well by robots.
I mean, Star Wars disagrees with you, but I agree with you, Bud. I mean,
like, maybe like these really precise surgeries, but not the compassion and care that you receive from, you know, like a well-trained nurse or physician.
Yeah, not to go too far afield on this, but you made me think of in Empire Strikes Back, the doctor robot just had a hand that was various needles, and I just kind of liked it in the, like, late 70s, early 80s, everyone's like, yeah, you know, medical robots, various sizes of, shots they can give you. Like, so at any rate, you know, I'm glad the robot hasn't worked out.
how can we spook our viewers about like the medical future most? Like, we'll show them this character who has needles for his hand.
It's right. It's just like, you know, you could take ibuprofen, or a robot could stick like a 4-gauge cylinder syringe into your face and make all the pain go away. So I'm for nurses, bud. You can write that down, Jeb. And
I second that motion.
They're gonna record this. I'm nurses, not robots. Nurses, not robots. I know that's a real, you know, we're really putting it all on the line doing that.
That's right. No, I for sure.
You didn't have any robots involved in the birth of your new child, right?
No, I mean, in Pittsburgh, thankfully, we've got a great birthing center here. And so Rachel's a big fan of midwives, and I've slowly come around to this idea. Like, I guess, you know, like there's a part of me that's like, well, you know, what if something goes wrong? I want to be in a hospital. But really, I think the midwifing philosophy makes a lot of sense. And we're like 2 minutes from the medical center. So
yeah,
we're good to go.
Midwife bot really just doesn't work out. So, well, speaking of something else that robots can't complain, but it's the guests that you keep finding for this show. Now, this person that we have today is not from Pittsburgh, but this is well within the range of all the kingdom of Bud. So who is it that we have on the show today?
So our guest this morning is Dr. Dave DeLeo, and he's the chair of the theology department down at the University of Holy Cross in New Orleans. And do you say New Orleans or New Orleans, Bo?
I say Nolens. Nolens!
Nolens.
Yeah.
Down in Nolens. He's written a book, An Aristocracy of Exalted Spirits, which is about John Henry Newman's Tamworth Reading Room. But recently, he's also gotten off the ground a nonprofit called the Newman Idea. And I don't want to steal too much of Dave's thunder, but it's really about sort of restoring Catholic ideas of education, not only at the collegiate level, but also with homeschooling and different other venues. So he just stayed at NINS actually recently, and it's just kind of, you know, like a really fun, energetic guy to speak to. So I'm looking forward to today's show.
Well, it's going to be great. Stick around after this break. We'll be back speaking with our guests here on The Uncommon Good. All right, bud. Horse 2 weeks in a row. Let's see how that works for everyone. If you have a comment about horses, want to congratulate Bud on the newest Mar, or anything like this, you can regale us on the Zip Whip Line. 515-223-1150. That's 515-223-1150. Hashtag UCG for Uncommon Good. The Zip Whip Line. 515-223-1150. We'd love to hear from you. This is The Uncommon Good. We'll be back right after these messages.
Catholic education provides the best opportunities for academics, sports, the arts, and service. Yet many feel it is financially out of reach. Well, don't let that stop you. Catholic Tuition Organization can help you with tuition so Catholic education can be a reality for your children. Go online to ctoiowa.org and click on tuition assistance. The bottom line, it's for the kids and for their future.
Have you ever wanted to see the scriptures come alive like never before? Well, you're in luck. Join Iowa Catholic Radio and Monsignor Frank Bagnano for our second pilgrimage to the Holy Land. This is a special edition, extended 12-day trip while you walk in the footsteps of our Lord Jesus Christ. The longer trip means we'll have a little more time for extra sightseeing at a slower pace and time for prayer. The pilgrimage will depart on January 24th and return on February 4th. It really is a trip of a lifetime. Space is limited, so sign up today. Go to iowacatholicradio.com and click under the Events tab.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Hi, this is Willie Farrell. Tamia & Sons, a proud supporter of Iowa Catholic Radio, is celebrating 20 years of business, and they want you to help celebrate with them. It's their way of giving back to the community who have supported them for all these years. The event is on August 5th from noon to 5. They'll have live music, bounce houses, bocce ball, and of course, food. Tamia & Sons is located at 1501 Southeast 1st Street in Des Moines. For more information, TamiaAndSons.net or 515-282-7976.
We're back with The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher, coming to you on a beautiful day where hopefully wherever you're at, you are not roasting. We're actually doing pretty good here in Des Moines. I'm guessing in Pittsburgh it's a lovely evening. Morning, I should say. Where our next guest is down in New Orleans, I have no clue. I'm not going to gamble and ask about like how hot it might be there, but I'm going to let you introduce our guest today on the show.
All right. Our guest today is Dr. Dave DeVeo. He's the chair of the theology department at the University of Holy Cross. He's published a book, An Aristocracy of Exalted Spirits, which I'm sure you can find on most online booksellers. He's also recently gotten off the ground a nonprofit called the Newman Idea. The website there is newmanidea.org. Dave, thanks for being with us.
Hey, it's great to be here. And just to ease, you know, you and the millions of listeners who are listening in right now, I am not a robot.
Good.
I am. I mean, it may happen one day, but right now, fully flesh and blood.
Dave, I've got to ask you real quick. On the screen, can you please tell us which of the following squares have a car? No, I'm kidding. Sorry, I was just doing a capture there to make sure you weren't a robot.
No, I am not a robot. Exactly right.
Well, Dave, since we're with those caveats, I'll throw in one of my own. You know, you recently stayed at the Institute for Newman Studies, and there I may have seemed like a congenial guy and everything, but I know you've got radio experience, so I just have to warn you, it's gloves off this morning. You've stepped into the octagon.
I'm ready.
Bud hasn't slept very much either because of the baby, so who knows what's going to happen.
Right, so he's an ornery new father again.
Well, Dave, so off the bat, let's just jump right in. Is there a crisis in higher education? If so, what is it? If not, what's all the fuss about?
Good question. And I'll just say that I'm waffling on this one now. I was so clear-eyed actually going in, up to NINS, and I think first of all, it was an unbelievable experience. Bud is in, I mean, honestly, it's like it's a heaven for nerdy scholar people. Because it's just like you walk out and there's just books in front of you for miles. But that was part of the problem is that I came with a very clear idea, kind of like, you know, there is this major crisis in education. But I kind of walked out of it after all my reading and actually you and we talked for hours. I kind of walked out and said, it's less of a crisis and more of an opportunity. I don't mean that taking it taking advantage of something. I mean it really as, this is a great moment to be Catholic and to be thinking about education. And I realize that there's a lot of fissures. There's a lot of openings out there for us to find ourselves. I think one of the things that has blown me away in the last 6 months is just the homeschooling movement and the vitality of the homeschooling movement. And the other thing is just there are innovative people out there thinking about, okay, so let's just take the world as we see it, as we should always as Christians. You know, we're not idealists. We have to take kind of things as they are. And as we see it, I think there is a lot of reason to hope that we can actually do some great things to kind of not only bring the faith, but the integrity of knowledge and faith that we so desire as Catholics.
Well, Dave, I was going to say, evidently, whatever you said, the people who were listening in on the line, that really jolted them, and they accidentally, you know, dialed the phone a bit. So keep going.
But, yeah, Bud was going crazy there. Just, like, started pressing numbers.
I was trying to, like, take some notes, and instead of hitting my keyboard, I was hitting the phone pad. So carry on.
So I think, and I guess what I see out of it is one thing I've just been very keen on and really thinking about is we have all the resources. You know, Roger Ayer wrote the Benedict Option, mm-hmm. and if your listeners haven't kind of keyed it, you know, the idea behind the Benedict Option is like, look, we got to kind of have a cultural retreat, reform ourselves or form ourselves in the Christian, marinate in the Christian spirit or the Christian tradition, and then kind of go back out in the world. And I would just say that it's Dreyer's message is to me, it's very political. So there's a political retreat because I think he can't kind of extricate his Christianity from his politics. But I also think that it's kind of like I look at it the other way around. It's like, no, we got this. Like we as Catholics, we have people like Bishop Barron. We have people like John Paul II, Ratzinger, Francis, and others who, and you know, out of even out of the ecclesial realm, we have wonderful scholars, you know, like philosophers like Charles Taylor and Alasdair MacIntyre, who have kind of looked around and said, okay, look, the modern world has given us a couple licks, has given us some shots, but guess what? Mm. Like, we can push back. And not only that, we have the resources, not to mention we also have grace that no one else has. And so I look at it as like, you know, we as Catholics actually have this opportunity because we do have the wellspring of faith and the wellspring of grace and the kind of the beauty of the church that, like, why do we need to be in retreat? I'm not trying to say like we need to go out like looking for a fight and all that other stuff. I'm just trying to say that we also don't have to be, we don't have to shrink from where we are. We should be confident that, no, we got this. We can do this.
Well, I'd have to say with, like, first of all, Bud, thank you for asking that very difficult question at the beginning of the hour instead of a minute before break. Thank you on that one.
I'm notorious for that.
Yeah. But on the second hand, you know, with what you're saying, Dave, the thing that I think is most important is I'm actually finally, you don't have to go looking for a fight because the fight is coming to us. But it's also the fact that I almost think complacency is one of the worst things for nearly anything. If you want to talk about building muscle mass, if you want to talk about like being good at your field, but in the terms of faithfulness, one of the things that kills holiness, that undoes the church, is worldliness, where it's easy to sort of be Catholic and sort of, you know, feel no resistance, right? So, you know, one of the ways that I always like putting this, like, I think Wittgenstein pointed out that education is all about going back to the rough ground. And he meant that if there's not friction, if there's not challenges where you can find your footing, you're never going to go up the hill. And I think sometimes with us in the Catholic world, in the recent past, it's been easy to do, and I'm actually looking forward to us finally having legitimate challenges that make us actually step up our game. So I'm with
That's
you
right.
that it doesn't need to be a matter of like retreating in the face of actually oncoming pressure, and Lord knows we're feeling it, and Lord knows that we are not only dealing with wounds of modernity, but very harsh, self-inflicted wounds. I don't think we need to tell anyone with all the news that's been released in the last few weeks about the self-inflicted nature of some of our wounds. But you know what? That's part and parcel of being Catholic and Christian, and the promise that Jesus has left is when the going gets tough, that's when the grace kicks in, if we will allow it, if we will, you know, give ourselves totally into the hands of the Lord. This challenge is actually going to be good for us as much as it might hurt.
No, I mean, I totally agree. That's what I'm saying is that, but we've had thinkers and doers and people out there kind of in the trenches already. And that's what I mean is that we don't have to like kind of be in this kind of reactionary kind of like, oh my gosh, they're coming at us. What are we going to do? Or we got to like, you know, or have this kind of like, you know, oh, they're taking from us what we once had. You know, I think a lot about the, like the university. A lot of people are like, you know, that's a Christian invention. That's ours. Like, how dare they make it into this, you know, utilitarian kind of careerist type of thing. And my thing is like, all right, like, okay, look at that. That's the world's always going to do that. It's always going to reduce it down to its most base form.
Right.
But we don't have to be captive to that, nor do we have to kind of be like, you know, kids with their toys at the sandbox, kind of like, you know, well, I'm not going to play with you now because I'm going to go home. And my thing is right. I think we got the better of the argument, or we got the better of the, and we got the better of the kind of the idea. So let's just go and talk to him about it and just say, because that's what evangelism is. It's like, we know something and we're here. We're ready to tell you that. And so
Dave,
and whether they're going to listen, that's fine.
Dave, I have to say, before my question, I love that we got this. And I think that's actually a pretty good encapsulation of what the apostles were about. They didn't fret or wring their hands about like who the emperor was or like the particular difficulties they were facing from religious leaders. They're like, we got this. Have you got a motto yet for New Idea, or is that, I feel like you need t-shirts or something.
I think it is. I've been saying that, you know, I've been just thinking that for a lot. I mean, I think that is what it is because, you know, and even like, you know, Jesus in chapter 6 of John's gospel, you know, he's given the full bread of life discourse, laying out like this is what it's going to be. You know, and people at the end are like, "You're crazy! I'm out of here." You know, I mean, meaning like if Jesus lays out the truth and people walk away, well, and people walk away, but it doesn't negate what he's saying is the truth. And so I just think that it's incumbent upon us to both, in whatever realm and station we're in, whether we're, you know, we're a mom homeschooling, or whether we're a university professor, or we're a lawyer or a doctor or a garbage man, like, you got to be able to at least have the basic to where you are to be able to say, no, listen, I got it. I'm confused, or there's weird stuff happening. And as you said, Bo, the fight's coming to us. But you got to be able to stand up and say, okay, but we got this. I'm okay with this. Or I can at least find the sources of renewal to feel confident in that. I just think that that's there.
I think that there's sort of, to diagnose some of these problems on here, I think that there's a spiritual softness that comes with when we get feedback or dust up that's not to our liking. I think sometimes, you know, and part of this is being, I'm trying to be charitable to this sort of feeling. We go, well, we have the truth, right? And I love, like, you know, if we're converts like myself and Bud, like, oh, I love this faith I've come to. If we're cradle Catholics and we've loved it all along, you know, we love the faith. We love the Lord. We want this for other people. And so then the first time, right, that you lay out on the line something you love and why, and someone goes, no thanks, and walks away, I understand, especially the first time, why that can be jarring, right? And that's something you have to get used to. But it's right. Sort of like another way that we play into the worldliness of the age, that we don't expect that, or that, like, we get our feelings hurt by it, or we kind of we give it too much credit that someone doesn't agree with us, or heck, thinks we're crazy, right? And you look, like you said, about Jesus, but I even think about St. Paul, who's running around, you know, the Mediterranean world, and people give very different types of response to him. Everything from, what are you talking about, to beating him with a rod. And are we really just going to, like, the first time that people in universities try to argue that we don't belong there, back down and lick our wounds? And you know, maybe that's not charitable to something like what Rod Dreher's trying to point at, but I'm with you that deep-seated, that's how it can sound. It can sound like what we're saying is, oh, gee whiz, these people don't want to listen to us, and, you know, we tried two or three times, but now we need to go retreat instead of just say, hey, what if what God called us to be is the punching bag for the Lord? Is there could be worse, right? Wouldn't it be an honor to at least be a punching bag for the Lord?
No, I mean, aside from using the great 50s phrase, gee whiz, right. I'm with you. but, yeah, I mean, I think that that's really, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think there is this kind of, we have to steel ourselves up, but it can be in a very positive and, in a sense, proactive way rather than being reactive. Or, like you said, because you keep kind of mentioning this, kind of slipping into the, like, ah, oh, you know what, I just don't want to mess with it. Like, let them do their thing, I'll do my thing, and we'll just, you know. And I think both of those options, to use that word, are, it's just not the way of the gospel. And it's not the way, it's not really what we're called to do. And I think now what it is, you know, Newman has this great phrase where he was talking about kind of when kind of the Darwinian and, like, the, you know, kind of Darwinian evolutionists and stuff were really kind of coming out and making their case in the 1860s. Newman was like, you know, I'm really glad that they're doing it, because now we get to see our foe by the light of day instead of trying to have night battle. And in other words, what he's saying is, I'd rather have it honest. Like, we now know where you're coming from. So let's have the real debate. Because when you're hiding, or kind of like, you know, kind of hiding behind words and phrases, I can't really get to it. So what I think you're saying, Bo, and I think you're right, which is there's a clarity coming out. And so we have to take advantage of that and get clear in our own minds and our own hearts. Okay, I got what you're saying. I hear your position. Now let me provide some pushback on that.
Dave, that's awesome. And I know, talking to you, part of your inspiration for the Newman idea is that you want to provide, well, for lack of a better term, I know you're not, like, thrilled with this phrase, but, like, Catholic studies for students at secular universities, or, like, culture formation and things like that. And I'm just, when we're talking about seeing our foe in the light of day, like, sort of a nuts and bolts question, have you gotten any pushback just with, like, I could see a public university being sort of territorial and saying, no, these are our students, and
we don't want you teaching them religion anyway. Like, what kind of conversations are you having in that orbit?
That, you know, that's a great, I mean, look, so I was, I had the, like, the graced encounter of working with Dr. Don Brill from the University of St. Thomas, the founder of Catholic Studies. And he started in 1993, so they're hitting their 25th year. Dr. Brill unfortunately passed away earlier this year just by an amazing kind of shocking. He acquired, or I don't know how it happens, but he, you know, basically acute leukemia. And he died 4 weeks to the day of his diagnosis. And in typical, you know, kind of Don Brill fashion, he was actually happy about it because he actually got to know how his death was going to be and when it was. And he really actually taught me a lot about death in our final days together, just about not only how you face it bravely, but also he raised questions, you know, because I said to him, I said, I've never thought about my death. You know, like, I thought about death, but I never thought about, like, how do I want to go? You know what I mean? And he said he had prayed a lot, you know, about knowing. And but through my work with him, Don was, I would say, he was a John Henry Newman scholar. But what's different between him and a lot of Newman scholars is Don took Newman's word as, you know, as true and said, okay, how do we modify it? And what he would use the word develop it and put it into play in this world. And so Don taught me something very important. I learned a lot about Catholic studies, but I also learned about how to kind of play this out in kind of the secular world, at kind of like, you know, the University of Iowa or at the University of Nebraska or at Arizona State University, big, huge public institutions. Don hatched this idea with several other people, and right now the leader up there in North Dakota is Monsignor Shea at the University of Mary, is bringing a Catholic sensibility, but more than that, the Catholic desire for the integration of knowledge, seeing how all things pass through faith and through faith become unified. But not meaning that faith kind of like gets the last word, but faith gets the first word. And then you allow knowledge to come to you. So you can be a biologist, a lawyer, a historian, a, you know, whatever it may be, but your faith is intact in lively engagement with that. And so to your question, Bud, you know, how does the secular university handle it? I criticized Don a little bit about the word Catholic studies, because I think Catholic studies, it's been used in a lot of other contexts and a lot of other places as kind of like a watered down, like we're doing Catholic studies, but they're not. In other words, the way Don did it was it required intensive formation and really understanding how knowledge works as a whole. Most, at least Catholic institutions that have Catholic studies, don't put the time and resources in that's required. So Don would say that faculty formation has to happen and on that. But the other piece to it is, if you are proposing it to a modern secular university or a large research university, you propose it on terms and on the way that they understand things, which is this. You have all these different, like, cultural studies, right? You have, like, Hindu cultural studies, women's studies, any, you know. So you come in and say, and this is using this famous, you know, Catholic historian Christopher Dawson, to say, well, Christianity is its own culture. So we tend to tie Christianity with the West, with Europe, but it's not. You know, even Pope Benedict XVI will say that Christianity is a Middle Eastern religion, and we shouldn't forget that it's not a European religion. It just ended up in Europe by missionaries, and really that Islam, remember, you know, it's important to remember that Islam severed the Christian East from the Christian West. And it's very important to kind of recognize that Christianity was all the way to China by the time Islam came out. But it severed the ties that we had. So Christianity really was a global religion from the beginning, but its heart was in you know, the Middle East. So,
well, David, I don't mean to interrupt you. We're coming up on a hard break. Yeah. But when we get back, we can continue precisely this. We can talk about aspects of classical education, homeschooling, some of the other things we're talking about. So, sorry to interrupt you, but we'll be back here with the Uncommon Good right after this break. But we were doing the horse emoji, but I mean the horse sound. Yeah. But literally, we just got texted. People are really bring back the eagle. We even got on the Zip Whip line with an eagle emoji. So we might have to really look into our hearts and decide what we're going to do there. So if you want to talk about that, if you want to like mount a campaign about which animal sound we should use to go to breaks, you can always go find us at Facebook, Iowa Catholic Radio, our Twitter handle at IA Catholic Radio. We also, of course, have the Zip Whip line, 515-223-1150. And then, as always, you can get our email, bud. Like, I'm sorry, I'm already becoming a millennial and forgetting you can use emails. We have the bi-monthly, weekly news bulletin that keeps you up on everything that's happening in the diocese and also with Iowa Catholic Radio. So Facebook, Iowa Catholic Radio, Twitter handle, at IA Catholic Radio, 515-223-1150, and the new bi-weekly news bulletin. This is The Uncommon Good. We'll be back after this.
Have you ever wanted to hear the Rosary spoken in German? What about Italian? Or even French? Well, I have exactly what you're looking for. St. Anthony's invites you to their International Rosary on Saturday, August 4th. This amazing rosary will be spoken in 6 different languages, including German, French, Italian, Gaelic, Spanish, and of course, English. A Mass begins at St. Anthony's Church at 8:30 a.m. with the Rosary to follow. After the Rosary, Monsignor Frank Chida will give a talk on deliverance in the Lower Church. So mark your calendar and invite a friend. For more information, go to stanthonydsm.org.
Get that bottle of wine ready and join us for Iowa Catholic Radio's Wine Collection Social. Join us for an evening of fellowship, heavy hors d'oeuvres, drinks, and a beautiful rooftop view of Des Moines. The social is on Thursday, August 2nd from 6 to 9 p.m. on the rooftop of Market One, located at 130 East 3rd Street in downtown Des Moines. Please bring a bottle of wine valued at $25 or more to help us build a wine cellar to be auctioned off. RSVP online at iowacatholicradio.com or call 515-223-1150. And as always, thank you for listening to Iowa Catholic Radio.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Since 1924, St. Vincent de Paul has been helping those less fortunate work towards self-sufficiency. Last year, St. Vincent de Paul helped over 20,000 individuals with food, clothing, and shelter, while also offering classes in financial literacy, high school completion, career readiness, and prisoner reentry. SVDPDSM.org, 515-282-8327. Shop, donate, volunteer, serve. This message was brought to you by Homemakers Furniture.
We're back with The Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. But I want you to reintroduce our guest to the show because he's probably mad at me because I interrupted him. No, I'm kidding, Bud. But yeah, go ahead and reintroduce him to the show and let's kick off the second half of the show. Bud. Uh-oh.
We're talking this morning to Dr. Dave DeLeo. He's the chair of the theology department at Holy Cross in Nolens. He's also the founder of the Newman Idea. You can read more about the Newman Idea at newmanidea.org. Dave, thanks for being back with us.
Yeah, no, I'm still kind of talking. I was actually talking through the break because I was really on such a roll, and when Bo interrupted, I just couldn't stop. So I'm back again, and you guys missed it. It was actually really awesome.
That was really the best part. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It was. It was kind of like the secret to life was I had it, and then it like went away. But it was, the horse neighing actually like screamed in my ear. And it scared me, actually startled me, and so I just kept going.
We used to have an eagle screech, but it was causing car accidents. So we transitioned to, well, it was a cat's meow for a couple weeks. Now apparently
we had a show down here on our community radio called Lanyap Theology, and we used to have it kind of, we had this kind of like Gregorian chant, like, you know, and today we'll study theology, and then all of a sudden this huge cannon shot, and then we have this like rock and roll come in, and the guy like, and now Lanyap Theology, and like, you know, I think car accidents happened as well.
That sounds like great radio.
Well, Dave, you were making this point when Bo rudely interrupted you about it was about cultural engagement. And this is, we talked about the gospel principle of like shaking the dust off your sandals, like when in the face of rejection of the message. What I hear you saying with that last point, I wanted to finish this point because I think it's an important one, is that, like, St. Paul said, to the Greeks, I've become Greeks. Like, I've become all things to all people. Mm. And it sounds like part of what you're talking about is we sort of take the modern university on its own terms, and it says, you know, like, this is a diverse place. Different cultures are welcome. And, you know, we use that to our advantage. Is that a fair way to describe sort of what you're talking about there?
Yeah, I mean, in other words, it's what we're asking the modern university, instead of being like, oh, look at you, you guys are like, you know, you're a multiversity, you're all over the place, you got this and that. We say, look, you guys want multiculturalism, tolerance, and diversity. Guess what? We want to be a part of that too, as Catholics. So it doesn't negate that you can't have like a Hindu cultural program, or a, you know, a Buddhist, or, you know, whatever. In other words, we want to just say, if these are the principles that you guys would say are so near and dear to your mission and message, great. We want to work on that. We want to work on that but we want to work it out the way we know as Catholics we do, which is integrating faith and knowledge, which is integrating faith and reason, which is integrating kind of spirituality and living. And so, you know, if that's the case, why can't we do that? And so I look at it as, instead of, you know, kind of being like, well, you're not what we want, we kind of show up and say, well, can we have our own corner to do this? So we don't focus on like what we would see as a failure or a weakness of a given institution. We would just show up and say, can we partner with you? But we get to do it our way. And in other words, in the integrity of our vision and the integrity of living out the gospel.
Yeah, and I see that word right there. So to toot my own horn of where I work, so at the mission officer at Mercy College, and I notice in our mission statement we have two verbs, preparing and integrating, right? They're both the infinitives, but the idea of prepare and integrate. And I think what's interesting about that is when you start talking about on our own terms and what we add to these discussions, everybody thinks like, we're like, look, we got like 1,000 pictures of stained glass window, hours of Gregorian chant, and then these theologians, which are all great. But you want to say like, no, actually what Newman brings to the table specifically in the idea of a university, and what we want to say is our own, foundational commitments about how we even view education, is there's this idea of preparing people to be a part of the commonwealth, the commonweal, the civic fabric, and in an integrated way. And so that when, like you said, we talk about the culture, we're not even going to go beyond the terms of, we're going to talk about it in a sort of historicist way, like this is what happened with Christian culture 300 to 2010 or whatever. We want to say that this is a philosophical thing too, that our vision, philosophical and theological vision of education, rests on preparation for the common good and integration of the various facets, not only, like you said, faith and reason, these like various things that are often seen as binaries, but even sort of integrating the different cultures touched by Christian culture and its education.
Absolutely. And, so it sounds to me like the University of Holy Cross and Mercy College have a lot, I mean, in talking with Bud and just hearing what you're saying, have a lot of similarities. So we have a huge nursing program, one of the best nursing programs in all of Louisiana. And so a lot of my time is spent teaching classes on what we call theology and healthcare ethics. And I think a lot of my students, our college is kind of 50-50. We have like 50% Catholic and 50% evangelical or other different denominations. And kind of a tiny percentage of Buddhists from the Vietnamese population and Muslims who've moved to New Orleans, mostly from Turkey. What's interesting is, you know, I always open my lectures and I always think about kind of proposing this to them that, the idea of a hospital is a Christian invention. That's what I mean about Christian culture. Christianity has introduced things into the world that we wouldn't even be having these lectures on, you know, healthcare ethics and theology if hospitals weren't invented. And Christians were the ones who honestly took it on themselves. I mean, obviously in rudimentary form, but, you know, I also have a class like the Christian contribution to, healthcare and medicine. I mean, what would modern medicine be without, you know, great Christian scientists, great, you know, great institutions, and so on and so forth? And so what I always try to propose to people is, it doesn't mean that, like, we've got the full share, that we've done it all, that, like, it's all us. It's more like, but two things that I think the Christian tradition has introduced into the modern world, which is now a feature of the modern world, and it's not going anywhere, healthcare and universities. I mean, the ancient world didn't have anything like universities, like we know it today. And that really comes out of a medieval tradition, that really people who wanted to know everything because they loved God, they wanted to know everything that God did and made, and they were also were creative and inventive. And that's where the root of the university and the idea of a hospital, you know, a hospital is a place for healing and rest for people who were sick or have been suffering or so on and so forth. So I try to connect what we see in front of us right today, even though it doesn't have the same vision, it doesn't have the same integration that we would like as Catholics, it still comes from the heart of our culture. And we can engage that way with them.
Well, Dave, in some of these conversations that we're having, they've spilled down to thinking about education at younger and younger ages. And I know from living in Des Moines, in the Iowa Catholic community, there's a lot of families who are choosing to homeschool. And Rachel and I have been involved with that as well. When you and I were talking when you were in Pittsburgh, there was another point that you pressed me on. I think it's an interesting one to engage. And this is the idea, like, we talk sometimes in homeschooling about classical education. But you were saying that, if we're going to be precise, like, even saying, like, classical education may not be the best way of phrasing what we want to do. Could you talk some about that?
Yeah, no, through the Newman idea, we brought, I began to look around, okay, so the Newman idea is really to say, who's doing the stuff that is, I believe, the most in kind of gospel-filled and innovative? And it's not to say that the tried-and-true stuff that we have, the parochial schools and the Catholic universities, are bad or anything like that, but honestly, they're kind of happy with what they're doing. And so I wanted to say, well, what are people doing on the margins? And part of it was what Don Brill was doing at universities. But the other part of it was I became introduced, and just throughout my own existential need, I wanted a good solution for my kid. So I became engaged with the Catholic homeschooling community down in New Orleans. And I was amazed, to say the least, of the energy, the excitement, what's going on. I also found that, you know, the lead in kind of the reintroducing of classical education and whatnot has really been for lack of a better word, a Protestant or evangelical kind of push. And the Catholics are kind of having to play catch up, which is weird because we're the ones who never actually abandoned the classical tradition. But we're kind of having to reintroduce it to ourselves in a whole new way. And one of the things I was working on with my a person I brought onto the Newman idea, who is really an expert in all of these things, we started to work out this, you know, I started to introduce her this idea of, what are we saying when we say classical culture? Because, like, let's just take a typical homeschooling family. Normally it's the mother, not always, but normally it's the mother, and it's going to have multiple children, and you're going to be using a curriculum like Classical Conversations or some variant of, and we're going to work on memory, and we're going to work on mathematical concepts, through Euclid or whatnot. We're going to work on grammar. We're going to work on we're going to use the Dorothy Sayers type stuff. And one thing that I just kind of jumped out at me was, I was like, you realize, like, that's not actually classical. If we have to take the classical world as is, meaning the pagan world, women never would train children in the arts of education. And I said, by the way, that's a very Christian thing to have happen, you know, because mothers started training children to read the Bible and whatnot. And I said, it's also very modern that we tend to do it in kind of isolated families. You know, I always remind people that the reason why Jesus got lost for 3 days from Mary and Joseph was because he's traveling with a caravan with his family of like 40 to 50 people. And so the idea of, like, my house, my kids, my neighborhood in my block is, like, I'm just trying to say it's a new thing. That's not part of the classical world either. And so we have to kind of reconcile that with this is today. So when we talk about classical education, we have to realize that it's so suffused with new Christian kind of innovations, which is the dignity of women, that women can be the principal educators of their children, is unbelievable. But the other thing I want to say is this. if we're going to read Cicero, and if we're going to read kind of, Pericles at Athens and his great speech, I can get that. I'm good with that. If we're going to read Ovid or if we're going to read Homer, I get that too. But one thing I would say is, you know, the Christians of the early empire, all they had was pagan education, classical pagan education. So they sent their kids to it. And Newman talks about that. But at the same time, as the Christian tradition developed its own culture and developed its own tradition, it became less and less about having to simply read Homer and Ovid and Virgil and, you know, Cicero. Because we had great orators. We have John Chrysostom. We have Dante. We have Milton. We have all these people who, through, in other words, they were, through an artistic, rhetorical, logical way, have integrated scripture, have integrated doctrine, have integrated these things. That, in other words, what I'm trying to say is, it is just as valid for us to study the rhetoric of Augustine's sermons as it is to study Cicero, which, by the way, I mean, basically Augustine is doing Cicero's rhetoric using the Bible. And
he had Cicero that we don't have. So, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. And, well, and Ryan Topping has a great, he has a thing on, he has a great book called, a small book called Augustine on Education. And Augustine is sitting there warning his flock, do not start with the pagans, because they are, unless you form their faith first, and then they can appreciate what the pagans are doing. But, like, in other words, Augustine would be like, it would be insane to start off with the Iliad and the Odyssey, unless you're just going to treat it as some type of, like, literary thing, or you're just going to look at its kind of elements and stuff. But, like, think of the stories and the myths and the ideas that are there. Unless you're, yeah, you know, like, you want to make sure your kid really understands kind of where the biblical narrative is coming from first, right?
You don't want to, like, start off. I can imagine this. You're in the crib and you're, like, reading about, like, and then they were all mad because one person stole the other's war bride. And that started a great fight. Yeah, no, your point well taken, that you don't want to sing lullabies about the Iliad to children in their cribs. And even
those
more.
I've tried.
Yeah, I've tried. They became very warlike. No, actually. The thing with me on this one is there's a slight misunderstanding, but it's like you said, it's very, there's a lot of ripple effects from it that we misunderstand what we mean by a great tradition. In fact, it's far too enlightenment and modern, and it infects a lot of classical, and not everybody, but you start seeing it, right, that there's this sort of like thing encased in amber, and if you pass it down, it will magically make your kids classically educated and, like,
yes,
you know,
right,
right. And I wrote I gave a talk about this like a week or two ago, so it's still fresh in my mind. What I said tradition actually a lot more is like is grave robbing. And if what I mean by this is if you look in the Middle Ages, they didn't have like this sort of like, oh, well, like there's all these pagans that you must read or you can't really go on. They just thought stuff was cool and they stole it. I mean, that's what happens with Aristotle, right? Is Aristotle was like, this is great. No one was, it wasn't until actually, funny enough, the Averroists, this is me dorking out, but it wasn't until actually the Islamic schools of thought started being big in the medieval universities that people even talked about things like historical ages. Like no one wanted really worried about getting Aristotle right in his context. They just thought parts of Aristotle were cool, so they started
doing it. Yeah.
And so the same thing with, so what I always bring up as a Benedictine Oblate is people being like, the Salim monks don't chant right. And I'm like, guys, in the middle of the 1800s, there weren't monks in France, so they just decided they needed to chant. And you're missing the point if you think we need to figure out exactly how someone did things before we then start teaching. For me, like you said, not only is there all sorts of things within the Christian tradition that show us how to do these things, even the sort of stance they had towards the pagans was different. And that's where, you know, I get back to this idea about like plundering the Egyptians. And like I said, grave robbing startles people, and that's why I use it. That's how we have to think about it. We don't need to like be beholden to the pagans because they were first. Although I do think there's something about like maybe if we had better pagans, we could actually reconvert them to Christians, but that's a whole other discussion. My biggest thing is to say, like, we do this because we believe all truth belongs to Christ.
That's right.
And are we doing that when we do classical education? Do we show people right that, you know, the best way to do this is through holy theft And that's what we're really about here, right, Dave?
That's right.
Holy theft.
That's right. No, and that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's at all. I think learning classical grammar and learning, you know, the trivium and quadrivium are great. I'm more of a, like, I really interpret it through kind of the Stratford Caldecott way, which I think he creatively rethinks and reappropriates and doesn't freeze it into these categories.
Woo, woo! Sorry, he's good. Yeah, go ahead.
And you know, Caldecott had that in this book that, I mean, every homeschooler should read Beauty and the Word.
Yeah,
it's just, but you know, you probably picked up on this because it blew me away. Somewhere in the middle of the book, he basically says, what makes, you know, Christianity so fascinating through St. Benedict is that St. Benedict at the monasteries kind of collapsed the liberal and the servile arts and saw them as an integrated and unified whole.
Right.
And that was completely not, like, that wasn't even available in the classical world. You could never think about how Ora et Labora et, you know, Studium could all be together and distinct, which is, like, very Trinitarian, right?
In
other words, the classical world thought, okay, so the free arts are literally for free people and the servile arts for the servants, and nary the two shall meet. Whereas Benedict's like, no, if you're not doing something with your hands and praying and then retiring at night to study your scriptures, something's wrong.
Yeah.
So there's something. And so that's, that, again, I'm coming back to, that's what the innovation of Christian culture is. It's little things. It's not some big, bold pronouncement like, hey, we're going to be Christian culture today.
Right.
We just do things
Christian culture
to the
time.
Exigency. Right. Right. Let's sit down and rap about Christian culture. No, it's not that. It's very much like, no. Praying's good. Working is good. And reading is good. Let's do it all. And let's see how they relate together.
There's so much we could talk about. Unfortunately, we ran out of time. I'm thinking about, like, yeah, with Benedict, he's like, hey, yeah, you might be a pagan, but hey, let's teach you. I mean, not a pagan, but like a barbarian, but let's go ahead and teach you these things. Or one of my favorite sort of paradoxes of all this is you have Bernard of Clairvaux, which at his time, he was the fuddy-duddy traditionalist. Oh, but by the way, when he's giving his sermons about the Holy Spirit, he's quoting Ovid's love letters, right? So it's only in the weirdness to the max that this makes sense. And anything that makes it too bougie, bourgeois, or like, you know, this is just this technique we're going to use to save our children, misses the epic, wonderful weirdness about how Christianity did these things. Now,
that's exactly right.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time. I really feel like we need to tell everyone here that we only got started, and so we have need another hour for the show. But Jeb's all mean about it and pointing at the clock.
Jeb.
Well, that only means one thing, right? Is Dave, we have to have you back.
Hey, this is a super fun show, and I will definitely, you know, brush up on my Star Wars metaphors and things about robots next time. So I'm really going to come prepared because now I know what this is all about.
That's right. That's right.
Well, Dave, if people want to learn more, where can they go to hear more about what you're doing?
Yeah, so, I mean, well, the first place to start, and really what I would invite, we're blogging on there. We have kind of video lectures posted, and we're going to be doing more as kind of the membership grows. But the Newman idea, and we have links there to what we're trying to do in the homeschooling movement. We're calling atriums. And it's kind of built off the Montessori idea of the atrium, but the Catechism of the Good Shepherd, but we're doing it in a fuller realm, I think. And you can look at also what we're kind of starting up with at the higher education, because I think this is it. Parents, you know, we love our kids and we really care. And we know that education isn't simply about like numbers and letters. It's literally the communication of culture. And the deepest things that we want to bring forward to our kids is our faith. And so the faith has to flow through words, numbers, letters, maps, whatever it may be. So this touches on all of our hearts, from grandparents all the way down to newly minted dads. Even though you're not really a newly minted dad, you're a
six times over.
But you know what I mean? It's something that really hits all of us. And so I think that's what the Newman idea really wants to look at and say, this is really important to every Christian out there. And, you know, we're trying to address it in our own creative way.
Well, Dave, thank you so much. I'm sorry to have to kick you off once more. We're actually going to be – I'll run into you later this week because the Newman Conference over at Benedictine. And just to tell everyone on the radio, we're actually going to be recording interviews with people over there and then playing those on the show so people might get to hear more from there. So, thank Dave. We'll see you this weekend.
Awesome, guys. Great. Thank you.
Okay, Jeb, immediately the horse. We're going long. Okay, there's all sorts of stuff to do. We're running out of time to talk about it. Please go on iowacatholicradio.com, check it out. You can sign up for the bulletin. Bud, real quick, name things they can do if they're listening to the show. Go.
Get on, listen to us all the time. Early in the morning, 5 a.m., you can do sacred scripture. That transitions into the rosary, and then there's prayer also at night, 9 and 9:30.
So, and then, of course, we are not only the ministries, not only the people talking on the radio, it's people who contribute like you, so please remember us. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our hearts, in our families, in our city, our state, our nation, the world, galaxies, universes, universes of universe, multiverse, the thing that surrounds all multiple universes. May Jesus Christ reign in all of that as well. This is The Uncommon Good. We will be back next Wednesday. God bless.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard every week on wonderful Catholic stations like this one and anytime on podcast. Just search for The Uncommon Good.